the week's most impactful, confusing, and downright head-scratching local news stories hand-delivered to you in less time than it takes to deliver a pizza. Week in Review is straight ahead.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Nick Haynes, and we are thrilled to have you with us on our weekly journey through our Metro's top headlines and some of the intriguing stories you might have missed. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week to make sense of it all from KSHB 41 News political reporter Charlie Keegan, tracking the region's top political stories and the trends in the news for KCUR News, Brian Ellison, at the helm of our Metro's newest newspaper, Next Page KC, Eric Wesson, and former Star reporter and editorial writer Dave Helling. Now, there's no shortage of stories about conflict, outrage and division. Can we in the media focus on something positive? Well, did you see that the Kansas City Police Department is out with new figures? And guess what? The KCPD claims crime is down in pretty much every category. Look at these. Burglaries down 17%. Property damage down 36%. Stealing 20% down. Stolen autos not going up, 33% down. Robberies down, homicides down, non-fatal shootings down 32%. So how does that gel with your experience? And how does this news go down among the dozens of out-of-town visitors who saw their cars smashed in outside a Hampton Inn hotel this week?
Somebody came through and just ransacked like 25 or 30 cars. Very frustrating, and it's nerve-wracking because I got to stay here another night.
Witnesses say it was more than two dozen cars with their windows smashed out, and it was mostly out-of-state plates.
Irritating, mad at myself, I guess, because, like I said, the reviews kind of said don't park here, but I did anyway.
I'm not sure they saw the latest figures. Or what about those residents of Waldo who saw their splashy new road improvement project faced by sideshows and a commissioned mural rendered unrecognizable? Why is people's lived experience the same as those statistics, Eric?
People's lived experiences are totally different, depending on what part of town that you go to. And I think it's metro-wide, especially. One of the things that they didn't show was domestic violence, which domestic violence is extremely high in this area as well.
The KCPD wants to trumpet every one-year change in statistics. Those who want to criticize the KCPD want to trumpet statistics that go the other way. 1 year of crime statistics tells us almost nothing. That is too small a sample size to be meaningful. We're going to need to look at long-term trends. Any solutions that have been offered for reducing crime in Kansas City, whether that be changes to policing or crime prevention efforts, they all depend on many years of implementation. So looking at a one-year change in crime statistics it ends up being more misleading than helpful.
I would only add this. I don't think, I disagree a little bit with Brian. I don't think any decline is meaningless. I mean, it is to at least some degree good news, but I think most people in Kansas City focus on the murder rate as a reflection of how they believe crime is going up or not going down, and that remains stuck at a time, frankly, Nick, when virtually every other metropolitan area in America is experiencing a significant decline in murder rates. That remains the biggest challenge, smashed windows and stolen cars notwithstanding. And it may be that the department would want to focus on that next year as well.
And by the way, next week we're going to do Hold Their Feet to the Fire episode, where we're bringing in the mayor and the new Jackson County prosecutor on this program. We will try to get to the bottom of it. Missourians wanting to block the state's newly drawn congressional map now have less than 30 days to collect 106,000 valid signatures to put the issue up for a public vote. And the stakes are so high, one out-of-state group is now paying signature gatherers $5,000 to stay home. Apparently, the unusual cash offer is having an impact. There are reports of signature gatherers now quitting their jobs, causing major disruption for progressive groups trying to secure next year's referendum vote. Brian, who is behind this latest effort?
It's a conservative, it's a Republican group from out of state. It's a PAC. This is apparently legal and can be done, but it certainly represents something about American politics right now that the very prospect of gathering signatures to put something to a public vote is something that can be attacked by simply spending money.
Yeah, we should be clear that signature gatherers are often paid in Missouri to begin with, and so this is an idea that you pay them to not do it,
yeah.
And because there is a financial incentive. And the business, Nick, I reported on this back in my days at the Star, the business of petition gathering across the country has become a huge business. I mean, there's lots of money involved. By the way, out-of-state money on both sides.
Yes.
So this is just another escalation in the battle over self-government and petition and initiative rights.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's a lot of concerns. Oh, this is dark money now paying for this. But yet, on the other side, there's concern, where is the money coming from for the referendum effort to begin with?
Missouri is awash in dark money in all issues, on the ballot and not on the ballot. And by the way, the complaint that somehow it's coming from out of state has often been ludicrous, because out of state money comes into politics in every state nowadays. There's not much of a border in terms of where cash goes for political issues.
And the interesting part about it was they were on a roll in getting signatures. I think they had already exceeded the number of signatures. And then you got the court challenges on whether or not they started gathering the signatures too early and this and that. But it's going to be interesting. There are people still out.
Can you refresh our memories, Charlie, as to what happens and when would that actually be on the ballot?
So folks who are gathering the petitions have until December 11th to get as many petitions as they need to put this question on the ballot in November of 2026.
Okay, thank you.
But quickly, it suspends the map. If there are enough valid signatures, that's the more important fact, not really when the election would come. It would suspend the new map, and so Emanuel Cleaver, for example, might be more likely to be elected if the petition signature effort succeeds.
Now, we know in the last few weeks, of course, in Kansas, they decided not to have a special session to rejig the maps there because they couldn't get enough signatures. But I did see this week that the Kansas Republican leaders have demoted a lot of Republicans who refused to sign on to that, stripped them of their chairmanships. Does that make it more likely then that that would send a warning in January when they come back that you better get on board with this?
My guess is the opposite would be the case, that whatever map the legislature comes up with next year would face a certain veto from Laura Kelly, and so you need a veto-proof majority. And you're now, as a Republican leadership, going to have to go to the very people you sanctioned back in November and say, no, but we need your vote now. And I do get the sense that the no votes on a special session were prompted in part by principle. People, Republicans, saying, no, look, redistricting is not proper in this way in the mid-decade. And so I think it's going to be an uphill battle next year to redistrict.
Well, I think Dave is right, and I think that has been true in the Missouri conversation as well. This week we saw some of the first courtroom arguments about whether this is legal in Missouri, and we saw the hashing out of what has sometimes been called Missouri's Airbud rule, of course referring to the famous movie scene where the referee says, there ain't no rule that says dogs can't play basketball. The argument was whether the fact that the Missouri Constitution doesn't have a rule against midterm redistricting meant that it couldn't be done or that it could be done. And that's the argument. We've always thought this is going to be settled in the courts ultimately, and I think that's still the case.
One of the representatives from Kansas, I had an interesting conversation with a couple of days ago, and he said, regardless of what we do with redistricting, Sharice Davis is still winning. And she's really popular, even among Republicans and Democrats, to try to draw her out of the district.
The longest government shutdown in American history is now over. There are 1,000 places you can learn about what happened and why. But what does it mean around here? Are there thousands of Kansasians who are cut off from food aid, Charlie? Are they now getting their benefits cards reloaded?
Yeah, so that's one of the immediate impacts we'll see is that, yeah, SNAP benefits will be back in the pockets of these folks who benefit from that. There'll be workers getting their salaries back.
Does that happen this week?
I think it happens partially this week, and then it might take another couple paychecks for folks to be made whole.
And Eric, actually, Brian, you are our globe-trotting guest on the program. He seems to be at the airport every 5 minutes.
Yes.
I mean, does that mean that we no longer have disruptions at KCI Airport?
Well, the reports have said that it's going to take a little bit of time to get back to normal. That certainly seems to be the experience whenever there's a significant travel disruption. But it does mean, hopefully, that the air traffic controllers, for example, who have gone without pay but have been required by law to work anyway, we'll start getting paid again. But again, as Charlie said, it does appear that it's going to take a little while. And remember, this doesn't even address the situation that contractors for the government, who are not necessarily guaranteed pay for these days they missed, there may be some long-term impact on our community that goes beyond just those employees who were furloughed.
And for the first time in almost 2 months, the Truman Library here will be back open. In Kansas City already. I was interested in how the vote played out on this. The shutdown is over because a group of centrist Democrats in the House and Senate voted to buck their own party to reopen the government. But Emmanuel Cleaver was a no, and Charisse Davids, too. Some thought she would vote yes, as she has carefully positioned herself as a pragmatic centrist. So what explains her vote, Dave, and could it backfire politically on her?
I don't think it's likely that it will backfire, in part because of what Eric talked about. She is pretty popular in her district. The other thing to keep in mind is the 3rd District, Johnson County, is increasingly Democratic. Right. I mean, if you go back and look at the results in November on the local level in Overland Park, in Prairie Village, and other communities, the moderates, the Democratic-leaning folks, the Johnson County Community College Board, all of those elections seem to favor a moderate Democratic approach, and I think Charisse Davids has done a brilliant job of following that. There were only 6 Democrats who voted for this resolution.
But she won't
be punished for it.
But I did see, I tried to look up on her Twitter page, her Facebook page, to see what her view was on it. There was no mention whatsoever. So she's not advertising her vote on this.
She sent us a press release about it.
There was one on Twitter today, a statement that she had made saying, hey, look, I can't, the medical problem, it continues to be a concern for her. So
I think this is like a win-win scenario for Charisse Davids. She gets to stand up for health care and look like a good Democrat, and then the government opens anyway because her vote doesn't really matter when the Republicans control. So it all works out.
In the ongoing story that we never seem to ever get any resolution on, Missouri Governor Mike Keogh is making headlines as he floats the idea of a new fabric roof over Arrowhead Stadium. As the Chiefs draw up plans for a dome stadium in Kansas, the Missouri governor says the Chiefs could stay in their current location with a new all-weather covering. He points to Frankfurt's Deutsche Bank Park, where the Chiefs played the Dolphins in 2023, which has a flexible translucent roof supported by cables that can be opened or closed depending on the weather. Now, I looked it up for you. The roof cost 20 million euros, which is American money, is $23 million. Isn't that a price tag, Eric, that many fans would say is worth it to keep the Chiefs where they are and to keep out the worst of the winter weather?
Next question. No. Yeah, it would be. That would be a small price to pay. But this thing with these stadiums is just back and forth. They're getting bids for a new design for a stadium in Kansas today. Then you got the governor from Missouri. And people in Jackson County still are not warm and fuzzy about it. Both of those teams need to make a decision, stick with that decision, and let people know what's going on.
This wasn't one of those breakthrough headlines this week, Charlie?
No, I think Governor Keogh even had to kind of backtrack a little bit and say, hey, I actually just kind of said this off the cuff. I didn't actually talk to the Chiefs about it.
But he has been meeting with the Chiefs. He's also said that, so I wonder if it's really completely out of the blue. What it does seem to do is it continues to keep the conversation in Missouri's court, where a lot of our attention has been shifted in recent weeks to what Kansas is doing. And I think the governor does not want to be the governor who loses the Chiefs. He wants to keep attention focused back on this side of the state.
But who we don't hear from are the Chiefs. We don't hear from Clark Hunt.
They're far too busy with the games that they have playing right now.
Well, John Sherman had a news conference this week and said, hey, we're still trying to figure out what we want to do as the Royals. let me just say that we're approaching in April of next year the 2-year anniversary of the defeat of the sales tax measure for both teams. You'll recall at the time some of us who were critical said, hey, look, this seems a little rushed. We don't know for sure where you want to go. And the teams both said, oh, no, this is it. This is what will keep us in Missouri. And now we know 2 years, almost 2 years later, that the decision on where to go is very complicated, and that voters were probably wise to put a stop button in place in April of 24 so that all these questions
at least we know this week, though, that the Royals are going to move to Overland Park, because we heard all those
of
stories
course.
About the Capitol Grill coming out there and Yard House, and those restaurants were a signal of that. Actually, Charlie, when I saw that, more than thinking that was the Royals going there, I was thinking, boy, what does that do to the Plaza? Could they have two Capitol Grills? Are the Capitol Grill going to move from the Plaza to Overland Park?
Right, Capitol Grill Nordstrom want tax incentives okay. to stay.
Yeah. All right. As we have no resolution on this issue, we are going to move on. Who will replace Gail McCann Beatty after the Jackson County executive fires the longtime county appraiser? One hiccup is that the man thought to be perhaps the best choice is a bit of a problem. Preston Smith was one of the Trump supporters who breached the police perimeter around the Capitol on January 6th. Does that disqualify Preston Smith from becoming the next Jackson County assessor, Eric?
Pretty much. He would be a hard sell for the Democratic part of the Jackson County legislature, which controls it. So he would be a hard sell for them to go along with that appointment.
Is there an imminent decision to be made here, or will they leave that office open for months?
No, I think the plan is to get someone in there within the next month or so, maybe 2 months, but... I don't think he's the one that's going to be...
Knowing my luck on this program, though, Charlie, they'll probably announce it right after we tape this program. I mean, that's what usually happens.
I spoke to Phil Devoto, the county executive, last week, and he said he's going to take this and give me the kind of political speech, take it under consideration, really do my due diligence. Okay. I will say there's been some people hanging around, a lot of watch parties, a lot of events leading up to the recall that would be candidates and I think are trying to keep their presence known.
A week after Election Day, Kansas enacts a new election law. Starting now, the state is ending the 3-day grace period for mail-in ballots. Currently, Kansas election officials count late arriving votes as long as they're postmarked by Election Day. Starting now, if a mail-in ballot comes in after Election Day, it will no longer be counted. Dave, what difference will that law make? Or are mail-in ballots too insignificant these days to be consequential?
Well, no ballot is insignificant, which, by the way, include military ballots, often difficult to get in. So, but I don't think it's an earthquake in Kansas politics. It's just another effort to try and control the electorate, which, by the way, the president has talked a lot about getting rid of voting machines, voting only on Election Day, absentee out the window.
But, you know, it's not that the Postal Service is getting your mail delivered any faster today, though, right?
Right. And what is the principle that this new law upholds? If the value of being able to call the election on election night and not wait 3 days is greater than the value of letting more people to exercise their constitutional right to vote, I'm not sure where that idea is coming from.
And Dave is right. Military, in the military, if you're overseas, the FOP, Fleet Post Office, it might take you a week and a half or 2 weeks to get just a regular piece of mail in, much less a voting ballot as well.
Well, the news comes in the same week, by the way, as the Kansas Attorney General files election fraud charges against a Kansas mayor who wasn't even an American citizen. In fact, it's become a national news story.
The mayor of a small town in rural Kansas is facing criminal charges for allegedly voting as a non-citizen.
State elections officials are trying to figure out how a man who they say is not qualified to vote in U.S. elections was elected mayor of a small southwest Kansas town twice.
Every time a non-citizen votes, it effectively cancels out the vote of a U.S. citizen.
Attorney General, be prepared to be busy as we go through these and find out potential positives of people who are non-U.S. citizens that have voted.
Now, I saw some people blasted the Attorney General's action as petty this week, but does this case, Brian, illustrate that there may be a wider problem of election fraud that many have chosen to believe?
No. It does not prove that. There is not a wider problem of election fraud. And what it shows is that there is one person who was voting illegally, but even that is not really election fraud in the sense that it affected the outcome of elections or was some part of some effort to get a broader group of people to be able to vote who shouldn't be. This is a solitary case. And, you know, Kansas's Secretary
of State... But they said there's more to come.
Well, the Secretary of State, Scott Schwab, who we saw there, has consistently said there is not an election fraud problem in Kansas. He has said that over and over. So this was an interesting
He is running for governor of Kansas now.
I'd forgotten. Yes, okay. Thank you.
Right.
But a lot of these situations like that, I think it leads to disenfranchisement of people wanting to vote because they're thinking that something's going on. Kansas City, Kansas mayoral race, 15,000 people out of 95,000 registered voters, only 15,000 people voted. I think people are kind of getting discouraged or not engaged in the process, and that's bad for America.
Well, speaking of elections, now that the election has settled down, the New York Times picked four mayors to give advice to the lightning rod new mayor of New York City. And guess who was picked for the story? Quinton Lucas. What was his advice, Charlie?
He said, when it comes to free buses, find a funding source to make sure that buses can stay free for a while. Maybe don't rely on COVID money that Kansas City kind of used a lot for that. And then avoid social media. Maybe have your family get off social media.
Yes. That was interesting. Eric, he said his mother was having fights on Facebook and he regretted all that. With you?
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
Are you picking on the mayor's mother again?
Come on, Eric.
No, we have a love-hate relationship. We both went to the same school. But, that's one of the things that he has to be aware of. Even though the mayor stays on there a lot, you very rarely see his wife on there or his sisters.
Yeah. Well, last week we mentioned a business journal story that asked where will they sleep. They were referencing the 650,000 out-of-town visitors expected to arrive in Kansas City for the World Cup when there are only 65,000 hotel rooms in a 100-mile radius, and Airbnb is projecting just 11,000 homestays. Well, perhaps City Hall was listening. Now the city has announced it's throwing out all the hefty fees, rules and regulations it's put in place over the last several years and letting Kansas Cityans register and list their homes for short-term rental during the World Cup for just $50. Tracy, our viewer, writes, they're making alcohol available 24/7 during the World Cup, and now we're going to have drunken and angry loser soccer fans in all our neighborhoods. What could possibly go wrong? Are we asking for trouble, Charlie?
Maybe. And I think Independence, though, I think opted out of that 24/7 liquor option. So it's not
everywhere.
Not everywhere. And I think people are going to rent their houses out no matter what, you know. So maybe if the city can get $50 from them, they'll take it.
But it's just to me, are they hitting the panic button at City Hall about all of these people now coming in?
Well, first of all, Tracy has a very low view of soccer fans.
All right.
It's questionable, but okay. I do think the city is concerned. I do think that, as you pointed out last week and again this week, the number of units available does not seem to match the promised numbers. I think there are a lot of folks who are just now clicking into this issue, who are just now saying, you know, I could make thousands of dollars by renting out my house. So I don't think that they've waited that long. I don't think this represents a panic. I think this is just when people are starting to tune in.
Well, in another World Cup-related story, the influential sports news site The Athletic says FIFA's next World Cup cash cow is, quote, exorbitant parking prices. It says FIFA is selling parking spots around Arrowhead Stadium for between $75 and $175 per spot on World Cup game days. What I find interesting about this, Eric, is that all the money for the parking is going to FIFA. We don't get any of it.
We don't get any of it, and we have to provide security. We'll have to clean up the parking lot. We'll have to do a lot of that. I think they'll pay the county for doing some of those things. But yeah, I thought that was interesting too. But $175 for parking?
It could have been worse, Dave.
Yeah, it could be better, too. Okay. I mean, that's a lot of money to pay to park your car. I think part of the idea is to encourage people to take mass transit. Rather than shell out that kind of money. Now, whether a mass transit will be ready and available, I think remains an open issue, and we'll see as we get closer whether that can be fulfilled.
When you put a program like this together every week, we can't get to every story grabbing the local headlines. What was the big local story we missed?
Could there finally be a resolution for Kansas City's most famous hole in the ground, the Mission Gateway Project, headed to court this week?
It's been an empty lot in a prime location for a long, long time.
I think we've wanted it to be redeveloped for so long because it just is ugly and it looks terrible.
The judge's decision could finally free the city of Mission to redevelop the site nearly 20 years after the Mission Mall was torn down. How
How many chances should a drunk driver get? A man with four DUIs charged with killing a 20-year-old KU student in a hit and run. Marion County pays out $3 million after that police raid on a small Kansas newspaper. Kansas City settles with ex-city manager Brian Platt for an undisclosed amount, 8 months after his firing. The Kansas City current season comes to a painful end. And Kansas City Holocaust survivor Big Sonia turns 100 this week.
It takes people who've been through something to reach people who are going through something.
I just want to thank you. Thank you.
It's okay. It's okay.
All righty, Brian, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different?
I did pick one of those, and we can have an update on a story here, Nick. The settlement with former city manager Brian Platt. KCUR reported this week through a Sunshine Law request that the amount of that settlement, at least part of that settlement, was $192,000. It said there was a lawsuit, a whistleblower retaliation lawsuit filed by Brian Platt. It came with a non-disparagement agreement and with an agreement to give a neutral job reference, although I don't know how many people are checking Brian Platt's job references with Kansas City at this point. It did also acknowledge there is some other confidential severance agreement, and it doesn't say whether there was additional money as part of that.
So if it was just that much money, I would think they got away cheaply. I thought this was going to be $1 million or something.
That would be just a portion of his salary.
Absolutely.
That's the part we know about.
Eric.
I said the same thing. I learned that it was not more than $500,000, but more than $400,000. So somewhere in there, I had my popcorn and Pepsi's ready because I wanted to see.
It was roughly what you'd pay to go to see the World Cup on a parking spot. It was reasonable. Okay, well, it was reasonable. Well, Dave.
Can I just point out, I used to park at Municipal Stadium for $1, you know, okay. So the price of parking has gone up just a little bit.
Downtown stadium.
Kansas City didn't enter a bid for the World Cup of 1928.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I didn't even know they had the World Cup back then in baseball. That's right.
Charlie.
I want to go back to the stadiums. The Royals last week closed their fan survey where they asked folks for information and feedback on three stadium sites. So maybe we're inching closer to them using that information to inform.
Within hours, we'll finally have the location. All righty.
Can I thank people that brought donations by the newspapers?
Yes.
Viewers that watched the show came by. I had quite a few of them that came by and dropped off donations.
Oh, I'm really pleased to hear that.
I was, too. It lets people know that somebody's watching.
Absolutely.
And on that, bring more.
All righty. On that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of Channel 41's Charlie Keegan and Eric Wesson of Next Page KC, from KCUR News, Brian Ellison, a news icon, Dave Helling. And I'm Nick Haynes. From all of us here at Kansas City PBS, be well, keep calm, and carry on.